Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kevin Koval. Happy to be in the building. It is we're recording and it's sunny outside, which normally we do not get the sun because we're late night, but we are moving our recording hours anyway to a non-disclosed hour. I don't want mugs running up to the studio and, you know, kind of, you know, chasing people outside like it's hot 97. But the point is, is that I'm riding solo again this afternoon because my revered co-host Tara Mahadevan is in the world doing fly shit, currently actually working on articles for Complex, and so she is on deadline and also traveling, man. Tara's had a really incredible winter travel schedule. I'm jealous a little bit. I've been moving around, but Tara seems to get really good assignments, and we're going to hear from her soon. We're one of the things that Tara's been doing on the road is also collecting mini mart episodes that we're going to start to integrate into the Corner Store, and you'll begin to hear those soon. Right now, I'm thrilled to have an esteemed guest in the Corner Store.
Yes!
An incredibly talented, funny, witty, brilliant woman who is been making a name for herself and really, I think, helping to change a old and important institution in Chicago through a all women's sketch comedy powerhouse collective, She the People. And now you can see her on the main stage cast in this latest cast at the Second City on Main Stage. Kimberly Michelle Vaughn is in the Corner Store. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
It's about time.
For real, right? That's how I feel. Where you been?
I've been here.
Okay.
Yeah. Where have you been?
You've been busy.
Florida.
Yeah, I've been in Florida. That's yes. True. And other places. But you have been on, it's been happening.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop really for you.
No.
You right now, so I will go backwards, but since we're here, you are on main stage of Second City. How many shows a week?
Six shows. No, eight shows a week, six nights.
Right.
So Mondays are our only days off.
Yeah.
Only day off. Shit.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's incredible. Yeah. People should go see the show. I was in the audience not too long ago.
Wait, you didn't tell me?
Because I'll tell you, because I was with a crew and we had very strict hours of being in and being out.
You can still tell somebody.
I knew I was going to see you here. And I also just wanted to say that not only is the show incredible and really strong, because I saw kind of previews of it and when it was in
process.
When you got, in process. But man, you guys figured out. You figured it out.
Really?
I think so.
Thank you.
Yeah. I really liked it. And I think, I mean, you know, I'm a fan. So I think, you know, you are a clear star. And there are others on stage. And this is not taking anything away from your castmates. But you're really doing your thing.
Thank you.
And it's really, I think, like in every moment and in this moment, it's powerful to see, you know, particularly, you know, some of the characters that you represent on stage saying the things that you do in a public and to a public that might not be ready for all of that messaging. So I know that, you know, some of your writing and some of even the work that you do is about changing a kind of public narrative and conversation. We're going to go back, but how is that going just so far? Like some of your experience, you know, speaking to
a predominantly white audience.
Yeah, and an audience that might not even be from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, like, there's certain nights where they're just like, no, we're not about it. And there are other nights where they're like, yeah, we're waiting. We want to hear from you, which is great. But there's still that frustration where you feel like you have to accommodate this specific audience, where I'm like, if I talk about, like, in the beginning, for one of our sketches, we have Get In, where I'll list off, like, movies that are black movies, and I'll be like, Girls Trip, Set It Off, and they're like, crickets, like,
they don't know those.
They don't know.
They don't know.
And I'm like, not even Girls Trip, I did it for y'all, but, yeah, and so I'll just be like, The Color Purple, and they're like, ah!
You know? So that's a weird movie to turn up for.
I know. Well, yeah, it's, like, just heightening it, but it's just, or I'll be like, Friday. Next Friday, where it's like, do you know? Yeah.
Right.
So that, but also I have to realize that because of that frustration, it's gotten me so far where Because I, for the longest, didn't think I had a voice at that building. I didn't think my voice should be on that stage. I never thought I'd be where I am today. So going through that frustration and knowing that, oh, I do have a place here, and that people are like, yeah, we need to hear this, especially like the Palestinian sketch that I wrote, where they're like, oh, what? I mean, we don't dive into it. I mean, we can't necessarily dive into it that deep. No one can, but
right.
At least bring it up like, hey, this shit is still going on. It's still relevant. So that's something where it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, like you do have a voice here. It's definitely brand new. And we kind of want to still put a cup over it where we can just contain it, but still we want you to have fun and be free. And I'm so thankful for that.
And that's a shift for
yeah.
you in that space and in that building particularly.
Mm-hmm.
So that must be refreshing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very refreshing. Yes.
Good. Well, all right. Well, so we'll get to how you develop that voice.
Okay.
But kind of if we can go back, like where do you come from?
Sorry, this Stolen Whiskey. Ooh.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Give it shout out to Stolen Whiskey.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Actually, that you know, can I tell you, I have not done my due diligence because we have some gifts for you in the corner store, and I didn't start with that, and normally I do. You are sipping on the spirits of one of our sponsors in the corner store, Stolen Spirits, and you're enjoying their whiskey. On ice or with a mixer?
On ice.
On ice. Very good. On the rocks. So I hope you're enjoying that.
I am.
And in addition, Max, our snack tour, has procured you various accoutrements and goodies from the corner store. We have a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup mini, king size mini for you.
Thank you.
You could open them, eat on air if you wish.
Yes.
Also, some gold emblem banana chips.
I love bananas, especially dried and plantains.
Those are good. Yes, those are delicious. And then also a pressed coconut Vita Coco coconut water.
Oh my God! Thank you.
Yeah. So enjoy. Any order if you please feel free to share with your castmates or Max and I, what have you. But
can you tell me why you chose these things for me?
Max,
I thought I wanted the banana chips first because they're healthy, and I was like, I gotta have something sweet,
Banana chips are healthy.
Max is not on the mic, but Max said that banana chips are healthy, and then a sweet contrast. I would say banana chips are also
healthy.
Sweet or, and not healthy. But it's the effort, Max, that counts.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, coconut water was also a health nod, perhaps.
Thank you.
We hope you don't walk away with diabetes.
I hope so, too.
Okay. So maybe just a few. But, whatever. You're a grown woman. You do your thing.
Yeah, I'm grown.
All right. So, yeah, where do you come from?
Oh my God.
We like sound effects, so please feel free.
I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I lived in Marietta, Georgia for until third grade. And then I moved to Lake in the Hills. Or no, I moved to Schaumburg, well, really Rolling Meadows. We call it Rolling Ghettos.
Oh.
At the time.
Is it like that?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've not spent much time out there, so.
It's lame.
What is it like?
Now it's different, but before it was very just like a bunch of apartments together, and it was just like the trashy, like there's
suburb,
a park.
Yeah.
Kind of suburban, but like kids go missing,
Sounds horrible.
Wasn't the safest park, and it was just like right in our backyard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And a lot of cockroaches, but it was fine. We were just like dealing with it. And then we moved to Lake in the Hills. And then I moved to Algonquin, Illinois. And then that's where, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did your, what do your folks do? What did they do coming up?
My mom, she is in sales and business. And my father is currently retired.
Okay.
But he used to also do sales. Yes.
Nice.
For MSI.
And there's a phone in the studio at WGN Radio for some unknown reason, but it's going off. That's that phone. I don't know why. Maybe they might be trying to get in touch with you already. We're not live, but maybe they know spiritually that you're in the studio. You siblings?
Yes.
Okay.
So I have five siblings.
Yeah, that's a big crew.
Yeah, Christina, Eldridge, Candace, Kristen, and Erica. Yes, but they're all I was the only one conceived by both of my parents, but they had previous divorces, and therefore they're my half-sisters or siblings.
And so you're the baby?
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And were you babied as such as a kid?
I wouldn't say, like, babied, but I was definitely, yes, somewhat spoiled by my mom and somewhat my family. Like, they basically gave me everything I wanted. But not necessarily to the point where I didn't learn right from wrong. Excuse me. This is whiskey. or maybe these 8 shows a week.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely had a great childhood. My parents were in my life and my siblings were too.
And what kind of kid were you as a child?
Rebellious.
Yeah?
Yeah.
From jump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd be that kid that would just run away in the grocery store. Like you see me right next to you, then you turn around and I'm gone. And I'd be at the lobster container. Look at the lobsters.
Just bugging out, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, yo, cause it's wild to see, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or I'd hide under the aisle, whatever shit. I don't know. Yes, I'd hide under some shit. And my mom would be looking for me, like, devastated. And, yeah, she would beat my ass when we get to the car.
She's like, you're not going to stress me out when I'm just trying to...
Exactly.
Go get some chicken breast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. How did you know?
Listen.
We lived off chicken breast.
My family too. Yeah.
Yeah?
My mom's too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like a year straight of just chicken breast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You did tell me that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It was not great.
Okay.
But you get tired of chicken after a while.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, moms would flip it up, but, you know.
Yeah. You got to switch it up.
Yeah. So where does that rebelliousness come from, do you think?
I think it's because I witnessed my siblings, my older siblings, especially my sisters, Candace and Kristen. They would always do something a certain way, and I would try to, I always wanted to emulate them, of course, but I always wanted to make it my own. So I guess, like, I've always wanted piercings, I've always wanted tattoos, I've always wanted to dye my hair, I've always wanted my room a certain way, a different color. I just always wanted to be a step up. And whenever my mom was like, hey, like, you should wear your hair this way or wear these certain clothes they're in, I would always want to be like, no, like, I want to wear just like tomboyish clothes. Like, I was really insecure with my body at the time because I was like, what are these little mountains growing? I don't, period, hair. Yeah. So, it's
right.
Just, yeah. So I was like, no, I just want to cover up and be comfortable with that. And so I would just always go against what my mother would usually want for me.
She must have really appreciated that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We still talk about it till this day.
But y'all are close.
Yeah.
Y'all are close now.
Very close.
Yeah. That's what's up. What were the demographics of Rolling Meadows coming up?
Well, I really grew up in Algonquin.
In Algonquin. Yeah. Okay. All right.
In Algonquin. Yeah, it was predominantly white.
Okay.
And Rolling Meadows, it was very diverse. And that's not why it was ghetto. It was just, you know.
Right. It was working class.
Yes.
Poor, you know.
Well, I would just say just how the administration handled things. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like letting things just run wild. And that's just a joke it was, where it's just like Rolling Ghettos.
Yeah.
Algonquin was predominantly white, and it's near Huntley, which is very hick, very rural. But I grew up in a suburban setting, and I always felt different for being black.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how was navigating then that social context and making friends and dating or doing whatever? How was that being a young person also trying to understand those differences? And
it was very difficult. I always felt like maybe I could blend in because I was light skinned, and I was just like, oh, I'm not like that, you know, trying so hard to not be black, which is really always something I've had difficulty with. Even when I lived in Marietta, it was still suburban, just growing up around predominantly white people. So coming there and like being in class, and then my hair's different. I was always so conscious about my knees, my elbows, you know, just like the darkest parts about me or that were different. And I would try so hard to just like not talk about it or even be proud of it. So I had a lot of white girlfriends too. And I remember when we had sleepovers, we want to play Spice Girls, and I would cry when they'd always make me Scary Spice. Cause who the hell wanted to be scary? You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't know the Spice Girls that well, but was Scary Spice also like the lone...
She was the black girl.
Yeah. That's wild.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So I always wanted to be Baby or Ginger, you know, because they were deemed as like beautiful, especially like posh. I mean, they all were gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. But I just felt like, oh, you're black, you're this.
Right.
So it's constantly being placed in this little thing, like where you're just like a little, point where you can't expand or you can't be anything else. I couldn't just be. And that was frustrating. And dating, no. No, that was never a thing. I would have crushes, of course, and I'm sure they would too.
Yeah.
But they would never really act on it. It was very hard. And sometimes, like, when I came into, like, high school, like, there were people of color. And that I'd be like, oh, I'm interested in, I want to date them. And they're like, I'm interested in you too. But they would not date me. They would only date white girls.
So, yeah. So who helped you navigate that? Or where did you go to seek solace and just maintain a sense of self?
Well, I did. My god sister, she's Puerto Rican and Jamaican. So it was like nice having her. But once I came to high school, we didn't really have that close bond anymore. We didn't have the same classes. And I had at the time my best friend, Tina. She's black. She's Guyanese. And so we'd get along and like relate to that. Then she moved to Atlanta. And then I would have like some group that was like pretty diverse and we were close. But it was still difficult in your own skin because you're like, I want a boyfriend. I want somebody. So I turned to MySpace. At MySpace, you could be anything. You could design your own page, put your own music. And so, like, I saw that there's this guy who's cute who's, like, an hour away in Carroll Stream. And he was my first boyfriend I saw in that. And once I got a boyfriend, I was like, and he's black, and I'm black. I felt, like, more, like okay with myself. And that sounds so messed up to say in so many ways.
It sounds like, yeah, representation is real.
Yeah.
Mirrors are real. You know, if you don't see yourself in the world, then to navigate how to be in the world is extremely difficult.
I understand for at that age, but looking back, it's like I had to find that through a man, you know?
I get that. Yeah, sure. So, sure.
Back then, we didn't have like what we have today where you see like black girl magic, where you get to see yourself and your hair and everything. I would always straighten my hair. I would cut off my hair just so I can straighten it and blend in more. It still wasn't enough, but I just really wanted to be white, yeah, and be accepted. But even then, they're just like, you're an Oreo, yeah.
Right, because then you can't be black enough then either. That's part of the tension there, too.
Yes.
So when did the arts start to come into your fold? Like, how did you begin to get interested in creating? Or I don't know if it came... I also... curious as how it came first.
Yeah. I've always wanted to be in the arts. I just knew I always wanted to be on TV. When I saw Whitney Houston and Bodyguard, I was like, that's what I want to do. It's dramatic. And when she sings, I was just like, oh, I want to do that. And so my mom, she's the one who really saw that and saw potential in me. And she was just like, you should, you know, take some classes at Columbia College, like during high school. Because I was on the dance team at our high school. But I was always in the back.
They weren't trying to put
They weren't trying to put you up front. And like, there was other messed up things about it. But I was just like, I don't know. I don't feel like I fit in still. Like I was trying. I think that's basically my whole existence throughout growing up in Algonquin is like, how do I fit in? Like, where can I fit in? And so my mom, thankfully, she just found like this class at Columbia that you can take for high school students for dance. So I took modern dance there and I met amazing women from all different backgrounds, different races. And I love that being exposed. And I was like, oh, I love the city. It's so diverse. There's so many things to do. And so, I fell into that trap where these people come to your school and they're like, hey, you want to be on Nickelodeon? You want to be on Disney? You have that look. And so I was like, oh my God, mom, I got an audition. She's like, this is great. So you audition and they're like, yes, your daughter's a star. Just pay $1,000 a weekend.
Wow.
And we fell for it.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I was just like,
that's so sad. Because those people pray. Those are vultures, really. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And I was just so thirsty for it. I just wanted to get out of Huntley and Algonquin. I just wanted to get out of that.
Right.
So I would, after school, I quit the dance team, I think my junior year or my senior year. And I would go to, it was John Robert Powers. I would go to their, just sounds like a scam already. Go to their building.
Sounds like a law firm you would see advertised on TV, like chasing an ambulance or something.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'd go there and I'd take classes and I would do monologues and I'd learn stuff and I'd actually audition in front of people, which it was a scam. It's so messed up. But I did learn a lot and it really was like, this is what I want to do. And then my mom's like, okay, well, you got to get your grades up. You got to do shit. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. But the only school I applied to was Columbia College and she recommended that for me. And of course you get in because they'll take anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, to stay in is a whole another prospect.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you graduated from Columbia?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So because I'm curious then about, obviously, like, you do get out of Algonquin.
Yeah.
You moved to Chicago or you're commuting at that point?
I was commuting the first semester.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then eventually you moved here?
Yes.
Okay. So that break, that separation, was that refreshing then to be in a city, be in a college that you had many more people who were looking like you, perhaps coming from similar, dissimilar places, but there was just a much wider pool of experience?
Yes. Definitely coming to Chicago was like a different experience, and I learned a lot more from different people. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, coming to Columbia has helped a lot with meeting new people. I don't want to give them too much of credit.
Right, facts, yeah. Well, I think what happens is that a lot of times people will come to any Chicago school and eventually begin to find their tribe.
Yes.
So what groups or what spaces or where did you begin to go outside of school where you felt like seen or where you could have a potential home? And were some of those places available to you as a college age student? I mean,
yes. I didn't find it outside of Columbia. I found it at the theater school. Once I got my act together, because the first semester I was just going crazy, you know, college, no parents, no rules. And it wasn't until the second semester I was just like, oh yeah, I need to find my tribe. I need to find, if I really want to do this, I should be around that. So then I started taking more classes, being at the theater building, seeing more shows, auditioning. And then that's where I found my cool collective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so who are, you know, some of the people or what was the vibe of that space? I mean, why was that such an important space for you?
Because everyone in theater feels like they don't fit in, you know, every artist, I'm sure. But in that space, everyone was just like, you know, so vulnerable, but so open. I mean, well, yes, so open to be giving and to nurture. And everyone was just so curious about each other. Like, who are they? How do they fit in? And really supportive, I found out. And that's what I loved about it. And everyone knew each other. It just felt like a little community.
Every artist needs that space.
Oh, yeah.
Needs that crew.
Yes.
Were you aware of improvisation? Had you been improvising at that point?
Before. Well, when I first came to Columbia, I was like, I'm going to not do dance. I'm going to do music. Then I took music theory and I was like, I don't know shit. I'm not going to do this. Just embarrass myself. And then I took an improv class with Joe Janes and he was like, you should really stick with this. And I was like, this is so much fun. Like, you don't need a script. You can just say whatever. And then, that's when I stuck with it. And then I was like, oh, I should take more theater classes after that. And that's how improv introduced me to theater, really.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Chicago being the home of kind of, you know, sketch comedy and, you know, so many spaces for improv throughout the city. Did you start to get out and go see it outside of the school?
Yes. I remember I went to IO, the old IO.
Yeah.
And I just thought these guys, I don't know who they were. It was a late show and it was free. But they were so funny, just like callbacks and just the games and just really reading and feeding off each other. And I just love the atmosphere of it. It was so gritty. Everyone was just so, I don't know, just artsy and just gritty and dirty. And it was a different environment, especially at a young age. I was like, where am I? It just felt so underground. And I love that. And then I would go to the playground, which was very warm. It was ran by like predominantly white men, of course, but they were so warm and they're like, come play. Whatever works. Yes. And, but when I would play, they were not feeling me.
Wow. Right.
Cause I would just say some, you know, and I think that goes for a lot of, black people starting off where it's like, we feel like sometimes what we say, especially in front of a predominantly white audience, when we first start, it's a little bit too much for them where it scares them. Where it's like, oh, they have to be like, again, I can't just be. I fall into that one stereotype, that thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So you felt the pressures of having to perform a very limited, particular kind of blackness before the white gaze.
Yeah. It's like a new blackface, low key. Like, it's kind of like that. And I hated that for so long. I felt stuck in that.
So how did you begin to break out of that?
I think once, and I'm still kind of like going through it where I'm just like, oh, I can be anything. I can be any character regardless of race. I think what got me out of it was more accepting of myself, because in Huntley and Algonquin, I felt like I wasn't white enough. I couldn't be white. I was too black. When I came to the city, I wasn't black enough. So that was the trouble I was going through. And so once I started like trusting myself and just being like, you know what? I see other women that are like me, like Maya Rudolph. And so I started like seeing like Tawny Newsome or Nicole Thurman at Second City. I was like, oh, I do have a voice here, because, yeah, they somewhat look like me and they're playing these roles. But their life, their experience, their black experience is so different than mine. So, yeah, I think just trusting yourself and your blackness.
And so when did you start to get involved with the Second City?
When did I get involved? I took comedy studies. Joe Janes recommended me, and that was 2013. Fall of 2013, I did comedy studies. And ever since then, I've been stuck with them. Yeah. None of it.
did you go, because they have, you know, they have education programs, and did you go through some of that? Or did...
Yeah, it was such a blessing. Deanna.
Deanna Griffin.
Yes.
Griffin. Irons Griffin. Yeah,
Irons. Griffin Irons.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Love her. Shout out, Deanna.
Yeah. 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 Deanna and Beth Klingerman, they both grabbed me, and they're just like, hey, you're great. Let's keep you. Let's hone your craft. Let's hone your voice. And I was like, sure. So then I did Urban Twists, and they're like, okay, great. You need classes. And I was like, yeah, because... improv. So then they gave me the Bob Curry scholarship. I was the first recipient of 2014. Yeah.
And will you just say a little what that program is, because it's since expanded to like that program.
Yeah. So if people don't know, Bob Curry was the first black man to grace the main stage. I'm not sure what year, but it was pretty late in the game. And so they made a fellowship program where they have 16 recipients that are of color or any part of diversity, gay, part of the LGBTQIA community, and basically just hone their voice, hone their craft, and they can write. You take improv, and it doesn't matter your background. A lot of them were stand-ups, or straight theater backgrounds, or improvisers. And then they have a show in front of NBC, and like all are produced by NBC. And in front of all these big wigs. And it's a great, fun two nights, I believe. Yeah. I think it was two nights. Maybe it was one night. Nope, it was one night.
Okay.
I felt like two nights. You're just on a high.
Right.
Yeah.
And you graduated from that program?
Yeah. I graduated from that, I believe, spring of 2014.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did conservatory. And this was all free. All scholarships. I did not have to pay for it. Yeah, it was such a blessing from Deanna and NBC with Marissa Ross. They gave me a scholarship. And then I...
Because you're nice, too. I mean, like, you have skills. So people are like...
They're like, yes,
we want to invest in you. Yeah, potential. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And I believe that was it. And then I started teaching. And I think that also helped me, too, just sitting back and seeing how others play. that helped. And I would even take other classes outside of it that they would give to me as a scholarship just to keep working at it.
Right. And hone your craft.
Yeah.
Well, and you could tell, I mean, I want to kind of, you know, one of the first spaces I saw you in that was a big impact, I think, in the city was the She the People show. That was in the Up space.
Mm-hmm.
That show seemed to be, it seemed to come at a particularly important moment in American history. I don't know if it was, did it come directly after the inauguration of 45?
Yes.
It did, okay. Mm-hmm. And was it in response in part to that cultural moment?
Absolutely.
And can you just give us a little background about what She the People is?
Yeah, She the People was an all-female cast that, and we, they also had a pre-writers room. So they had great Second City alum come back and write some of the sketch material. And then we also, as a cast, would write some stuff and pitch some stuff. And we would just show satire about how women are seen, even women of color, are seen in America and the things that we have to go through. And how also just feminism and how white feminism, really, too, just highlighting that and how it's an issue within the community. And it's still running right now with a new cast, fairly somewhat new, but it's phenomenal. It was so much fun. And just being working with all women was the best. We were on the same cycle, some of us. But it was the best.
It looked like y'all had fun.
So much fun.
And it also was some of the most poignant political theater, political comedy, satirical comedy in the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved the critiques it made because, like great comedy, it was digestible and also impactful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you guys really were going in on some topics that I think we as a country were having a real difficulty thinking about and certainly talking about in such a public space.
Yes.
And was that part of the idea behind that show, was to kind of put forth some things that might shift a conversation?
Absolutely. And I think when you have a cast of all women, that's going to happen. Something needs to be said. And it's just having a cast of all women. It does say something. Even our stage manager, our musical director, women. Mm. Yeah, it was funny because a lot of men would come and they'd be like, oh my God, I thought I couldn't laugh. I thought it was just going to be attacking me the whole time. And I was like, that's the problem.
Right? Yeah, we have a lot of work to do as guys. Yeah.
That's where it's just like, are you going to feel that way if it's an all black cast? Or it's like, I'm not going to go.
Right.
You know, or it's just like, what?
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to be that way.
But you guys got some really good feedback, attention,
hell
love.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a testament that the show is still running,
mm-hmm.
too. Right.
New material, so check it out.
Right, okay, mm-hmm. good. So that is still happening, and you moved then from there, from She the People at the Up Comedy Space at Second City to Main Stage. You made that jump, which is a big jump to make.
Yeah.
Especially in the kind of ecology of Second City, folks don't often make that kind of jump.
No.
Right. So how did that happen, and like how did it feel to kind of get that call? I don't know, did they bring you in an office? I don't know how it happens, you know?
Well, I'll say this, I did not suspect this, like, at all, that this was gonna happen. Like, I had zero expectations. I was like, I'm going to New York, I'm gonna have my titties out, like, I'm gonna have fun, going to Afropunk, I'm gonna live. And I got back, I get a text from my producer, Allison, and then, but I didn't know it was her. So they're just like, hey, are you free Wednesday at 4? And I was like, oh, who is this? And I was like, yeah, who is this? And they're like, it's Allison. And
Allison Riley.
Yeah, Allison
yeah,
Riley.
I love Allison, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. She was just like, you need to save my number. And I was like, oh. And she's like, can you meet tomorrow? I was like, yes. So I came in and it was Matt Hovde, Claudia Wallace, and Allison Riley, and they're just like, I sat down, they're like, we appreciate your work, we love your voice, and we thought you were great in She the People. And Hovde's like, you want to do this? And I was just like, yeah! So excited. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, on a high, I was like, fuck, like, this is crazy. The Main Stage, like, Oh my God. Like,
what does that mean for folks who might not know? Just even as an artist who, you know, might have been, I don't know if you were kind of desiring that at all, like to be on the main stage or not, but as an actor, improviser, writer, comedian, what does that mean in terms of being able to be on that stage night in and night out?
It is honestly an honor because, I'm not crying.
She's not. I can verify.
it's such an honor because Tina Fey, Rachel Dratch, Stephen Carell, even people who I'm sorry that are not on, didn't do SNL or went on to do whatever further with their career in Hollywood, I feel like just those people have done so much on this stage for me to have a voice and to be on there. And it's such amazing. The cast is phenomenal. So I was really excited about that because they have taught me so much to just play more. You know, it's main stage, but it's not serious. It's nothing is serious. You know what I mean? So just have fun. And I'm on the highest level at Second City. I'm basically in heaven. I'm not in purgatory anymore.
Mm. And you feel that?
Yeah, it's really fun, like, just to be at the highest level and just know, like, oh, like, don't tell me sky's the limit. Like, there's so much more to push through. Like, there is no ceiling at this point. And the blessing to have exposure, to have more people come see. And the thing is, we'll always have a show. It's always going to be sold out. People are always going to come see the show. And sometimes I do take it for granted. I'm not going to lie. Because I'm like, I would like a day off or
right,
three.
Of course.
Yeah. But just knowing that security, that someone's going to see me. They may not like me. They may not like what I have to say. Or they may love what I have to say. They may love me. That's just great to just be seen.
Well, in this stage continues to be a proving ground, a launch pad then into other spaces in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, you know.
Right. I mean, yeah, a lot of people go straight to SNL, both as actors and as writers.
Mm-hmm.
And then people get involved in other ways. I mean, people have, you know, really incredible careers as comedians, as right. I think Second City produces some of the best writers.
Absolutely.
In comedy. In, you know, over the last, I don't know, 60 year or whatever it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to talk about what is on in this show currently, what it's called and how people can go see it. But I wonder if you already began to think about what's next, or are you kind of so entrenched in the everyday of this show, especially because it's still a very new experience?
Yeah.
Have you thought about, I'm going to Saturday Night Live, I'm going to these things next?
I'm always thinking about what's next because that's just the Aries in me, you know? Yes, I believe in astrology. Man, anyway.
Yeah, that's okay. We're a wild people. So,
yes,
yeah.
Very wild. yeah, I'm always thinking about what's next. I'm writing new stuff for myself. Like, I'm learning that, oh, I can write for other people. And I don't necessarily have to be in it. I'm also auditioning more. So I really would love to be in movies. I would love to be in pilots, new shows. I really like dramas. I just want to keep that creativity going. I'm not saying where I am right now isn't right. And I definitely need to live in this moment more because there's still so much I need to learn. But I feel that I do need to look at what's next for me. And what I feel like is next for me is definitely movies or TV shows and maybe possibly moving to LA.
Oh, dope. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will be sad to see you go. In the meantime, tell us about the main stage show. What's it called and what can people expect in this show?
Okay. It is called Algorithm Nation or The Static Quo, and it is our 107th review.
Wow.
I know. And I'm just going to let y'all know, spoiler alert, it opens with gunshots. Yeah.
Yeah, guns kind of find their way in and out of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that could be triggering to some, which I totally understand. But we're saying a lot throughout the whole show where we're very unapologetically just like hitting it hard where. We're calling out everyone, liberals and conservatives. And it's talking about how basically, that's why we call it Algorithm Nation, which goes to like Rhythm Nation with Janet Jackson. Hey. People don't know.
Hey.
But yeah, so how what we see on our phones really shapes our mind to things, you know? And even just speaking, if I talk about pigs, I swear whenever I go on Instagram, I'll see pig videos. And it's just like your phone's always listening. So what you say or your point of view, that's all you're going to see. So we, quote unquote, say that like this show is designed for you, this audience specifically. So it's kind of like our like this is your fault. So what's happening in America? It's everyone's fault here. Everyone's held accountable.
One of my favorite sketches is that white liberal scene where you and
Tyler,
yeah, come over as a couple to this white, I don't want to give it away, but I think that the critique of white liberalism in that moment, and particularly a kind of like, even like a Chicago white liberalism is really poignant in that piece.
Thank you.
Do you, like, you guys write the show together?
Yes.
And so how does that work? I mean, some of it is done through sitting down and writing a sketch individually. You bring it to a group. Some of it's found through improvising a scene and then kind of working out some of the best bits there. How does all of that process work and prior to putting up the main stage show?
So all of the above. So either we'll come in with pitches, which means like we can be like, hey, I want to be a dad. You be a daughter. Great. We're going to do this scene. And we'll just improvise it, but be like, I know I want to talk about X, Y, and Z, right? Or you'll just come in with a written script and be like, okay, let's just workshop this. And then sometimes we'll just be like, as a group, like, what do we need? What else do we need to say in our show? And sometimes we'll just write it together. And then the day of, during process, so we'll do our whole show for the set, we'll put it in and we have to be off script. So we'll pitch it that day, put it in the show. That's just how productive we have to be.
Right. Wow. That's, yeah. And the show changes really every night because every night you're also, I mean, even if you're just doing the script, I mean, there's moments that you find in a scene, I think, to maybe turn up or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're also improvising in the show most nights or every night as well.
Yes. Well, especially during process. Yeah.
Right.
When you know, like, oh, okay, I can find new discoveries, make new discoveries, which is great. But sometimes even now, like, we have to update some of our stuff because it is somewhat political and things are changing. So we'll improvise and be like, oh, that got a laugh, or oh, they don't get it. So it's kind of like always evolving.
Right. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of talents that you get to see in this show. You're dancing a little bit.
I dance the whole show.
The whole show. You're also, you drop some bars.
Do I?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
oh, what's your shine?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, which is awesome because you could rap actually for real.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, and is that something that like are we eventually going to see like an album out of you, like a mixtape? What's happening?
I would love that.
Yeah,
I would love that. I think that's what I need to get to writing to
for real.
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't worry. None of y'all really listen to it. Unless I put out a video, a lot of ass, and then you'll love it.
I promise ass.
Yes, yeah. With my Obama
that's right.
Political
yeah.
thumb.
That's right.
I promise ass. So yeah, I will do a lot. I will make a mixtape. Thank you for that.
Hey, no, you should.
But What's Your Sign was created by Ryan.
Nice.
And because we were all obsessed, especially the women, we're like, astrology, like, you know, I'm a Cancer, I'm an Aries. And we're just like, oh my God, I feel this way. And it's just so fun. And then when you go to audience member, and I remember our director's like, no one's going to know their sign. That's so old. And I was just like, you have no idea how people are so, you know, into it now. It's especially heightened with on your phone with your algorithm. So, go to people in the audience, old ass men, and be like, what's your sign? They're like, I'm a Sagittarius. And it's just like, they know. And so it's just having fun, like improvising with that too, just like calling them out because like every sign sucks. There's no perfect sign.
Except Aries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's be real.
Max, what's your sign?
Scorpio.
Oh!
Do you want to improvise Max's about Max's sign? Can you?
Mm. You are so reliable, sex undeniable, passion indescribable, but there's just one problem. Scorpios are crazy as fuck. Y'all just want to be choked all the motherfucking time. Yes, you do. And you're like, why are you obsessed with me? Oh my God, why aren't they obsessed with me all the motherfucking time? But you know what? You need to grow up, okay? All right? Not everyone wants to be choked.
Wow. That seems really personal. And Max, I know too much
Scorpios.
About you. Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
They're fun. Y'all some freaks.
Hey, there you go. Max, do you feel seen or disturbed?
I think that was spot on.
That was spot on. Okay.
Spot on?
That's okay. Wow. I'm disturbed.
Everyone likes to be choked.
Hey. So, Kimberly, where can people, where should people go to get tickets for the main stage?
You can go to our website at www.secondcity.com.
I think that's right. The Second City, I don't know.
In Chicago, not Toronto.
That's right.
Or LA.
Right.
It's in Chicago. And we have shows Tuesday through Sunday. Tuesday through Thursdays at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. And Sundays at 7.
And you guys improvise after the late shows?
Every motherfucking night.
Every motherfucking night. Yeah. And the improv set is free, too, right?
Yes, it is. So people, you don't have to see the show. You could just come in.
But people should see the show. It's a really, absolutely. It's a great show. It's funny, but it also, I think, offers something in this chronic moment of political discord that, you know, is really important to see and hear. So, no, thank you. Thanks
Sometimes
for doing that work.
Sometimes you forget that it's a great show.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
so
well,
because
you're doing it eight times a week, I'm sure is... not easy.
Oh yeah, but you're just like, oh, just not in the moment sometimes, but yeah.
I'm gonna ask you one more question. Well, I'm gonna ask you two more questions. How because that is such a rigorous schedule of performing, how do you prepare and do the work of self-care in order to be ready to put it all out there every night?
What I've learned is don't stay inside. Even if it's cold, do something. Go to a plant shop. I love plants. I also am in therapy. I see a therapist every other Tuesday. And I also like to go to like coffee shops or new restaurants, catch up with friends, old friends. This job can be very just a lot. Yeah. But at the end of the day, the cast is going through it too. So you can always depend on them too. And sometimes you're like, hey, you need your space. I need my space. Once we get on stage, we'll do it. We just got to take care of ourselves mentally. And vitamins. Lots of vitamins.
Bet. And where can people find you on the internet?
Oh my God.
Banana chips.
You can find me on Instagram at Suburban Black Girl. But Black Girl doesn't have any vowels except for Suburban. And then my website is KimberlyMichelleVaughn.com. Mm-hmm.
Bet.
Yeah.
Well, Chicago, go see the show if you've not already. Go back again. It's really great. And thank you so much for being
thank
with
you.
Us this afternoon. Long time coming, and it's great to see you.
You too.
Thank you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at Corner_Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.